Welcome to Spook Center Podcast, and here's your host.
It's 3 a.m. Can't you mutter in your room?
Marge kicked me out.
Michael Preston.
Week number 3 for the Kook Center Podcast here in 2013 and the final one for the first month of the year of January. I'm Michael Preston, and I promised you a week full, or a podcast full of basketball this week, and I'm not going back on that promise, because next week it's all recruiting and all football again. We're doing a special Tuesday podcast next week. We're going to talk about recruiting a little bit and the incoming recruiting class on Wednesday. Obviously a big day next Wednesday with National Signing Day. And then we'll do a wrap again on Thursday as well. So plenty of football to get to next week, but we're going to stick with basketball this week. Coming up in a little bit, talk to Jeff Neuster about the men's basketball team and what's going on with that particular round ball squad over at Washington State. But first, I want to touch a little bit on the Washington State women's team. Split this weekend against Oregon State and Oregon. And I thought that was a weekend, when you're at home, that you could win both games. Oregon State, a decent team. Oregon, though, is just an abhorrently bad team. Came into that game 2-16 on the year, 0-6 in conference play. A team that lives and dies by the three-pointer. Paul Westhead coaching that team, so of course they live and die by the three. They jacked up 452 threes this year, second only to Washington in the Pac-12. And they made just 27.4% of them on average. Now, if I'm going to give you some stats from this game, just based on what stats they are, just a few select ones, you can tell me who won. And also keep in mind, WSU is their best in the conference at defending the three. Oregon turned the ball over 26 times to Washington State 17. 9 more turnovers. Washington State took 15 more shots than Oregon did. 15 more. So how come Oregon won? How come Oregon emerged victorious in that game? 12 for 30 from beyond the arc, so about 13% above their season average from outside. 10 for 33 from inside that arc. Washington State was 25 of 55 on two-pointers. And here's where it gets really ugly. 4 of 23 on their three-point attempts. And that's a game you absolutely, even though you were 5-12 coming into the game, that's as close to a, yeah, you had better win this game as it will get for that women's basketball team all season. But they dropped that game, luckily came back and beat Oregon State in overtime on Sunday. So they now sit at 6-13, 2-6 on the year, and in June Doherty's sixth season as the head coach of this team, I start to wonder whether she is the leader that they need. And this, it kills me to come to that, kind of to that line of thinking, because I am one of June Doherty's biggest fans. I adore her as a person. She is an incredible person to work with. I covered the team for 2 years at WSU. She's so easy to work with, always wants to talk to you, give you the latest about her team, and she's always, you know, always there. Hey, if you ever need anything, you call me, you get some sound bites from me, anything. She's like everybody's mom. She's great. But I'm starting to wonder whether the reason she was let go from UW at the time, I thought were pretty asinine, to be honest. But I'm starting to wonder if there's any modicum of truth to that. Is she just a really good recruiter who doesn't coach as well? She's had some really great recruiting classes coming to WSU, but so far, no good results. Double-digit wins in 2 of her seasons, but double-digit wins only does so much. And I realize the Pac-12 is a hard conference to play in. It's a very hard conference to be successful in. It is one of the best women's basketball conferences in the nation. There's no doubt about that. But there needs to be more steady improvement. The early excuse was, these players aren't hers. And I would agree with that. And in fact, those were rosters full of players nobody wanted. Sherry Merle's rosters were devoid of virtually any basketball talent. And that's fine. But June's had a full, you know, she's had freshmen come in that have now graduated. And are we to a point now with her where we start to wonder whether she is the coach for this team? Now she has an extension. And the other thing too is, I don't think this is a program Bill Moose is particularly worried about. Obviously, most of his focus on football right now. But once his attention is taken away from that, is it something that June Dorney needs to worry about? I think it legitimately is. And I don't know that she is the coach for this team going forward. And it kills me to say that. She is an incredible person who has overcome so much just to be in her position. But to be competitive in the Pac-12, you not only have to be a great recruiter, which she is, you obviously have to be a great coach. I don't know that she is that second thing. She'll have a couple of years to prove me wrong, but she's going to have to do it because once the football team, hopefully, gets a lot better, folks are going to start to expect these other programs to come around. Men's basketball, which we'll get to in a minute. Women's soccer is certainly doing that. Baseball's been to the postseason a few times in the last couple of years. Women's basketball is that last piece of the major so-called second-tier sports. Can June Dorney bring this team to where it needs to be? I don't know that she can. And I used to be a person who was convinced that she would do it. Jeff Neusser coming up next. Talk a little men's basketball here on the Kook Center Podcast. Back here on the Kook Center Podcast, we are joined by the godfather of Kook Center, and Jeff, I want to clear something up for folks who don't know. I hear this said two different ways. How do you say your last name?
Neusser.
See, there you go. Now, you can't say you didn't learn at least one thing when you listen to the Kook Center Podcast. Jeff Neusser here to join us, talk a little bit about Kook Center, or about WSU Cougars men's basketball. If we had our own basketball team, I think we'd manage it a little better, Jeff.
we'd have Sherwood, so we'd have that going for us. For those of you that haven't met Sherwood, he's a large man.
Yeah.
And we'd be feeding the post hopefully more effectively than the Cougars are able to feed Brock Modem.
Can we go with the Wes Unsell, just get him to use his butt to bat guys down in the low block and just get those easy lay-ins that way?
We could. I think we could.
Mm-hmm. I think so, too. So WSU coming off a split weekend down in Oregon. They're standing at 11-9 on the season, 2-5 in conference play with 11 games to go. So we are at the two-thirds kind of pull right now. Jeff, just your assessment of how this season's gone so far. I mean, obviously it's been disappointing, but just maybe expand on your thoughts on how the 2012-2013 men's basketball season's gone so far for WSU.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of people are really disappointed. I'm only, I guess, marginally disappointed at the moment. You know, because, I said as we were heading into conference season, I felt like this was probably a 7-win team as far as conference went. And I think just in terms of what they've done so far, you know, my only disappointment is that they don't have one more win. And I know that's, you know, I know that's not like a huge difference, but, you know, 2-5 versus 3-4, you know, feels a whole lot different. And, you know, I sure would have liked to have seen them gotten, you know, one of the Washington or Stanford or Colorado, you know, one of those home ones, especially Washington or Colorado, you know, just one of those games, or Cal, where you just kind of, you know, they get sneak one more win out of there. And, you know, and they had a couple opportunities. You know, they were right there with Stanford, and Stanford just shot out of their minds. And, you know, they were right there with Washington, couldn't get a stop at the end, and, of course, couldn't score at the end. You know, I think the only things that are really disappointing me right now is that, you know, I'm not seeing as much growth as I'd hope to. I'm still seeing kind of the same problems of the last few years crop up, lack of execution late in games. you know, just fundamental things from time to time. But, you know, because most of their limitations are physical limitations. You know, they're just not great shooters. They don't have a guy who can penetrate. There's just not much you can complain about with stuff like that. But, you know, the execution factor still is a problem and frankly, is kind of old after, like, 3 or 4 years of that.
Sure. Now, like you said, it hasn't been a great season. You're not on the too terribly disappointed side, because this is kind of something we expected. I got to go to the Pepperdine game earlier this year, and that was just an utter and complete disaster. And I guess for me, the most disappointing thing so far, kind of discouraging thing, has just been that lack of consistency. You saw them play so well against Gonzaga at home, take a top 10 team down to the wire. It took Kevin Pangos going coast to coast with a last-second lay-in to beat that team. What for you has been kind of the thing that you are most disappointed with? I mean, you kind of highlighted it a bit, but what if you could pick out one thing, what would that be?
Yeah, you know, I would say probably two things. One is, the biggest thing to me is that Brock's been a bit of a disappointment. Now, don't take that the wrong way, that Brock has done, you know, a bunch of huge things wrong or something. It's just more that he hasn't been the player that we grew accustomed to at the end of last year, and that's something I'm planning on writing about this week. But, in fact, by the time this hits the website, it might already be up. You know, he hasn't been as effective, and that's not really his fault. I mean, some of it is. I feel like he has not done a great job adjusting to what defenses are throwing at him. Defenses are able to really overplay him without the threat of a penetrator like Reggie Moore, who filled that role, obviously, for the last 3 years. You know, last year you overplayed Brock at your own peril because Reggie could slice right through you to the rim. Well, we don't have a guy like that on the team this year, and so teams are really overplaying Brock. The other thing is we don't have an Abe Lodwick either, hitting 46% of his threes. So, you know, the guy who's guarding DJ Shelton is sort of daring DJ to shoot the three and make some while overplaying and really denying Brock the ball in scoring spots. So, and DJ has made a few, but he just hasn't been as prolific. So I think those two factors have kind of conspired against Brock and made things a lot more difficult. I feel like the last couple games done a better job realizing that his role this year might be a little bit more to open things up for other players. And you saw against Oregon State that he really filled that role very well, opened things up for Mike Ladd, who scored some, and then things opened up for Brock after that. So really, I felt like he had a very good game. I think he scored 20 points and only used 21% of possessions, where last year, you know, he was regularly using around 30% of possessions. So really efficient game for him, so I was pleased about that. Second person would be Devontae Lacy. You know, it's weird because, you know, you don't want to be too disappointed in a guy who had a knee injury earlier this year.
Sure.
But after he went off against Gonzaga, you know, he felt like, oh, well, the knee must not be bothering him that much. But, you know, the thing against Gonzaga was really driven to a large degree by shooting. And, you know, he's been an inconsistent shooter. And, you know, I've tried to tell anybody who will listen, you know, I really watched this guy play in high school, and I still have high hopes that he can be really, really good. And I feel like he's doing the right things right now. He's Oregon State was not so good, but, you know, against Oregon, he was trying to get to the rim, and I feel like those are things that he needs to do to be effective, because I just don't know that he's ever going to be a consistent enough shooter to be able to rely on that outside game. He's a guy that I watched a ton in high school, shot very little from the outside in high school, and when he did it, you know, frankly, just wasn't that good. You can see it if you watch him real close. His footwork isn't great. He just doesn't have that consistency, and especially for those of you who watch, you know, Clay real closely, you know, I mean, you looked at Clay, like, even when he was off, I mean, every shot look the same. And you don't see that with Lacy. And so and I don't know that he's ever going to be that. I really don't. So a little disappointing that he's sort of disappeared, but you know, in some sense, you know, I'm encouraged by the fact that I really don't think he can keep shooting this poorly forever. I expect him to come back and contribute. And God, if we can get him and Ladd and Modem to perform all at the same time, we might actually be onto something.
They might actually win more than two conference games right now, that's for sure.
They might.
Yeah, you talked about Brock emerging here in the last couple of weeks. What, you know, in a season where It has by and large been disappointing. You know, you're looking at 11-9 right in the face, probably looking at a sub 500 season if you had to kind of, you know, look down the rest of the 11 conference games to go. It doesn't look like they'll be able to stay above 500 for the rest of the season. Postseason probably out of the question. What are some of the bright spots, you know, we can kind of take from this season and maybe carry to next year? If we already want to look towards the next year, when you're going to get I can't remember the young man's name. He's Chuk's or Igbo's younger brother, though, coming in. Hopefully, Q Johnson also going to be playing next year. What are some things that this team's doing right now that we can kind of say, okay, that's good for next year? And what are some of those other things we can look forward to for next year as well?
Well, the defense is one thing. I know that, you know, people tend to complain about defense under Ken Bone or whatever, and the defense is much improved this year. You know, it's not as improved as it might otherwise be, you know, for all of our love for Brock Modum's ability to score in all sorts of fantastic and creative ways. Frankly, he's a pretty subpar defender. And so any defense that's got a guy like that in the middle, got Brock Modum in the middle, is probably going to struggle to prevent two-point shots, which, you know, sure enough, they're having a hard time doing in Pac-12 play. But, you know, when you look at the other things that are going on, one of the key things that I like to see is that they're not allowing a ton of three-point attempts. And they've done a good job of that this year, especially in Pac-12 play, even with Oregon State launching like 25 of those things on Saturday. You know, I felt like that was more. Now, there were some that were wide open, and, you know, that happened. And some of that was Dexter's not quite playing Ahmad Starks properly.
Sure.
And allowing him to get off some shots. But once they switched Royce onto Ahmad Starks, you know, I feel like they've done a better job limiting clean looks at threes from other teams. And the result of that has been a team that's been shooting fewer threes against them. So to me, that's a good indicator. Royce Woolridge, for his inconsistencies on offense, has been a really good defender. Replacing Reggie Moore with him has been a pretty substantial upgrade, I think. So there's lots of things to like defensively. And then, you know, you're seeing some improvements offensively. DJ Shelton's a kid that I'm really excited about for next year, the ways that he's improved. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to depend a little bit on how Ken Bone uses him next year. I think he's hinted that they're going to take Jordan Rayleigh, who's redshirting this year after transferring from Iowa State, stick him in the middle, which would leave Shelton in the same role that he's in this year. And that would be really, really disappointing to me, because I don't think he's a true face-up four. But he's, you know, if he can just finish a few more shots around the rim, he's already a superlative defender. He's by far the best rebounder, team, probably the best defensive rebounder we've had since Aaron Baines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's made some real strides, and if he can finish a few more shots, I think he could really break out next year. So, you know, I know people are stressed out or whatever, and they're thinking, you know, how are we going to replace Brock, and how are we going to replace Mike Ladd? And, you know, honestly, I think next year's team has a really good chance to be better than this year's team, with the young guys that are going to make improvements, and then guys like Q Johnson and Ike Rock and Brett King are coming off the bench. I think he'll have more weapons to use, provided that mm-hmm. nothing crazy happens between now and next October.
We've mentioned his name a couple of times, and that's Reggie Moore. You talked about Royce maybe defending a little bit better than Reggie did, but in terms of distribution of the basketball, how much does this basketball team miss Reggie Moore? Especially, I think you've talked about before, how much does Brock Modum miss Reggie Moore's presence on the court?
Well, when you look at last year's offense and this year's offense, last year's offense was the best one that Ken Bone has actually ever had at any level by adjusted efficiency. And this year, it's a very average by Division One standards, which means incredibly below average by Pac-12 standards. And really all you did was take two guys out of the mix. You took Abe Lodwick out of the mix, and you took Reggie Moore out of the mix. And, you know, while, yeah, you miss Abe Lodwick, it's not like he was using a ton of possessions. I mean, his ability to space the floor was useful, but it's not like, you know, that was some major, major weapon on the offensive end. Teams had to respect it, but it wasn't a difference maker. Right now, what you're seeing is the biggest difference is they just don't have a guy who can break somebody down off the dribble and create his own space.
Mm-hmm.
Royce is pretty crafty, you know. I mean, he's shown some ability with some spins and things like that to kind of get to the basket, and, you know, but nothing where he can just put the ball on the ground and blow by people.
Sure.
There's been a number of times this year where he's probed and been turned away trying to turn a corner on a guy. So that clearly is not his strength. And the other thing that's not his strength is he's not a passer. You know, I mean, you look at the guy and you go, well, you know, I mean, you're trying to get him to play point guard. He hasn't, you know, he hasn't played point guard in a month and a half, because they finally just went to Mike Ladd and said, fine, you go play point guard.
Yeah.
And because Royce just couldn't do it. So, you know, maybe he can grow into that. You know, maybe he can still, there's hope to grow into that where he becomes, you know, a guy who can play 10 to 15 minutes at the point next year, so you don't have to put it all on a freshman. But, you know, they really miss that element out of Reggie. Now, whether that means the team would be better with him, I can't say, because Royce is that big of an upgrade defensively on what Reggie was doing. And you can survive having one sort of poor defender on the floor, which is Brock, but having two on the floor for 35 minutes is sort of asking a lot out of your defense. And, and that's what they had when they had Reggie and Brock on the floor at the same time. So, you know, I don't know that they would have gained anything, honestly. I know that Kyle Sherwood likes to say that the team would have two or three more wins if Reggie was playing, and I don't know if that's necessarily the case, because they might have given up more buckets and led to the same record. So, you know, it's a trade-off, and net-wise, it's probably not that much different than it would have been. It just would not be so painfully ugly on offense to watch.
So, a lot of hemming and hawing about the job status of head coach Kim Bone right now, and you know it's difficult to, it's always a difficult question to ask when you say, okay, well, how much of a you know season X falls on the coach's shoulders? How much of what's going on right now, you know, you can obviously say everything falls on head coach's shoulders because everything is under his control, but how much of what's going on right now is, you know, maybe Ken Bone's strategic things he does with his offense and his defense? And is this a situation where, I mean, I don't think Ken Bone's going to be fired after this year, but is this something does he really need to worry about his job maybe after next year if this team does not improve like we think they should?
Yeah, I mean, after, you know, I've been saying for years that after next year is really the first feasible time that it's really even feasible, I guess is the right word, you know, that he might really truly be on the hot seat and might actually lose his job. It's not financially feasible until then to do it. He's making $800,000 or $900,000 a year. You know, if he were fired at the end of this year, they'd owe him $2.5 million, and then they have to go hire a new coach at about $1 million for himself. So, you know, it's not real likely that he's going anywhere. Now, whether he should, you know, personally, you know, I was a guy who championed the hire of Ken Bone, you know, 4 years ago. He was my number one pick, along with Stu Morrill out of Utah State was sort of 1B, you know, but I was like, you know, Ken Bone, that'd be great. He's got, you know, ties in the Northwest, excellent coach. He's been successful everywhere he's been, you know, Lorenzo Lomar raves about him, you know, all this stuff. And so, you know, he's my guy. Well, you know, as I've watched the team over the last 4 years, you know, there have been some things that have been disappointing. You know, the lack of execution, the lack of crisp offense, the reliance on players to sort of create rather than execute. Anytime they've had to come down, it seems like in a late game situation, they struggle to execute a play. They struggle with basic executing of an inbounds play from underneath their own basket repeatedly. You know, these are all things that are just pointing to they're not being taught well enough how to do these things. And so, you know, maybe that changes. Maybe, you know, the class that comes in next year, you know, I'm real high on all three of those guys. I think they all have excellent potential. So, you know, it could be a situation where he gets enough talent that becomes less of an issue. I think that's what he had at Portland State. I know because he had so many guys transferring down from other schools and took a lot of chances on academic risks who were talented. You know, so he just had a lot of talent to work with. I don't know if that was the case at SPU. I've heard people say that. I don't know that for sure. But what I know is that he's never had better talent than anybody when he was at WSU. And the things that allow you to overcome that talent gap, or at least compete with that talent gap, I haven't seen from the team. So, you know, in that sense, I kind of go, yeah, you know, he's been disappointing, and, you know, I would not be, you know, crying if Bill Moose decided at the end of this year that enough is enough. But, like I said, I just don't see that happening. Which is, I guess, sad news for all the people listening to this who wish he would go away.
Yeah, you can probably thank the previous athletic director who signed him to a fully guaranteed 7-year contract.
Yeah,
that was a mistake.
You know what? Honestly, I my pet theory on that is that Ken Bone sat down with Jim Sturrock and looked at the roster with all that, because, you know, Tony Bennett left him with
Nothing.
You know, everybody said, oh, Tony Bennett left him with all this talent. But Tony Bennett left him with a roster full of guys who were built for Bennett ball, except for maybe a couple of guys like Clay and Casto. And the other guys were all sort of niche players who fit into that system. You know, you look at a guy like Marcus Capers, you know, I mean, yeah, you know, he started contributing offensively in like the last, I don't know, six games, eight games of last year, but up until then was sort of a nothing offensively. And so, you know, they had all these guys who would have been really good fits for Tony Bennett, and he could have molded, and then he left. And so then Ken Bone's doing his thing, which is very different. And he's stuck with this roster full of freshmen and sophomores, basically, with no scholarships to offer. He had like one scholarship to offer in his first 3 years.
Nicola Coprovita,
transfers. So, you know, my pet theory is that Ken Bone sat down and said, listen, you know, unless you want me to run a bunch of these guys off, you need to give me more than 5 years. And so, I have no absolute inside knowledge whatsoever, but that's really the only way giving Ken Bone 7 years makes sense. Unless, you know, again, Jim Stirk was you know, afraid somebody else was, maybe Ken Bone was talking to somebody else. I don't know. I do know that, or I do think that had we not hired Ken Bone, somebody else would have about a year later. So
probably, yeah.
You know, who knows?
I think that sweater vest was choking his spinal cord going up to his brain, maybe starving him of oxygen a little bit. Jim Stirk loved those sweater vests, didn't he? I'm gonna leave you with one question. This is an easy one. For those that might be planning on going to the Pac-12 tournament, it is in Las Vegas, the center of everything that is fun and illegal to do in your home state. Is it going to be worth going? Because no matter how good the team is, WSU has historically had a really hard time getting past the first day. Is it going to be worth the trip, considering the tournament starts on Wednesday? Is it going to be worth your trip if you can even? Is it going to be worth taking some vacation time to go down to that tournament if you want to watch WSU win this year?
Well, the answer to that's easy. When is it never not worth your trip to go to Vegas?
That's true. So, I guess, reason 1A to go would be you're in Las Vegas. Reason 1B, okay, fine. If the Cougs lose, I can go drink away my problems with a yard-long drink from wherever it is,
you know, honestly,
to get those.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, you know, if it's me, I'm like, dude, like, the greatest 2 weeks or 10 days of my professional career were the 2 weeks that I got to go cover the 3A and 4A state boys basketball tournaments at the Tacoma Dome, and I literally spent every day from 9 a.m. until midnight watching basketball, basically 8 days out of 11. Mm-hmm. You know, like, so you're talking to a guy who would watch pretty much anything anywhere for as much time as he could get away with. But, you know, I think, you know, if you were thinking about going and you're like, yeah, I'm kind of a basketball fan, you know, but really Vegas is the main attraction and, you know, is there going to be enough good basketball to hold my attention? I'd say yes. I think, you know, there's this perception that the Pac-12 still sucks, which frankly just isn't true. Arizona's real good. UCLA's real good. Oregon's real good. Mm-hmm. And I think there's actually some depth this year. I mean, you saw what Arizona, maybe you didn't. I don't know if people are paying attention to basketball or not, but Arizona State beat UCLA,
yep.
UCLA beat Arizona, you know, so I think there's a lot more quality in this conference than there has been in some time. You know, I think you're probably looking at a case where there's at least three teams that get into the NCAA tournament.
Absolutely, yep.
And it wouldn't shock me if a fourth one was able to sneak in there. And then Colorado, if they could go on a run, is poised for that. Look, Arizona State, 16-4. Overall, 5-2 in the conference, with a nice win over UCLA, which I would consider an NCAA team at this point. You know, there's some depth there this year. Doesn't matter. The bottom is still bad. You know, Utah's still not good. Oregon State's still not good. Mm-hmm. We're not good. USC's still not good. But outside of that, you know, there's definitely some there's definitely some talent this year, and there's actually some, you know, some star type players. You can go watch, you know, Shabazz Muhammad from UCLA, and Kyle Anderson, my favorite player from UCLA. If you don't watch that guy play, he moves in extra super slow motion and makes every smart pass you could ever possibly want a player to make. So he's a lot of fun. But yeah, you know, some high tempo teams, Oregon, UCLA, they will run, and Arizona State will run. People don't know that, but Herb Sendek's got them playing faster.
I didn't know Herb Sendek allowed his players to do that. I didn't know he let them do that.
Yeah, well, Well, geez, when you have Jahi Carson, if you put Jahi Carson on the Cougars, that team would instantly become a top half of the Pac-10 team. He's that kind of game-changing, mm-hmm. break him down off the dribble kind of point guard. So I think, you know, if you kind of like basketball and Vegas is your deal, then I would say, yeah, you'd have a great time.
Even if you don't want to go watch basketball, you can come play roulette with me. Jeff Neusser, he's gonna sit down. He's gonna play the $5 minimum roulette table with me. I think that's what's probably gonna end up happening.
Got it.
I bet it all on red. That's my color. We'll be right back. We're gonna wrap up the Kook Center podcast in a moment with the Dunderhead of the week, and it's a good one. Stay tuned. Final segment on the Kook Center podcast. You know what that means? It is time for your Dunderhead of the week.
Freaking idiot.
And this one goes out. This is a very special one because I can remember, as I think all of you can, being a teenager, not understanding why adults didn't like teenagers. And now I can see as an adult why you didn't like teenagers. But it was especially apparent to me on Sunday. Now, Mrs. Preston, one of my Christmas gifts I got were some Clippers tickets. Awesome. See the Clippers, Lob City, up-and-coming team here in L.A. I was really looking forward to the game. Went down there on Sunday, ESPN Zone, whole bit. And it was a lot of fun. They beat the tar out of the Blazers, which is even better for me. But sitting behind me was a young man, teenager, wearing a Chauncey Billups jersey. Chauncey Billups Clippers jersey, that is. And Jamal Crawford in the game, and he was ranting and raving about how great Jamal Crawford is. Oh, yeah. I can get behind that. He's been annoying the whole game, but he's talking about a guy from Seattle. I can get behind that. Rainier Beach High School. And he started talking about where Crawford was from, and he couldn't remember. So I turned around, I politely informed him, well, Jamal Crawford's a Seattle native, went to Rainier Beach High School. No, he's not, man. What? No, man, he's not from Seattle. Dude, he's from Seattle. He went to Rainier Beach High School. He's from Seattle. No, man, I don't think that's right. Well, then where is he from? And he offered me no response to that. So before I jumped over my seat, the wife was able to calm me down. But I just... Don't tell me a guy's not from somewhere and then offer up no places to where he could be from. That's all I'm saying. Recruiting next week, big week on the Kook Center podcast. Next Tuesday, a day early before signing day. So we can get you all that info you need right here on the Kook Center podcast. We'll see you next week.